Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. I'm your host, Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on X, the Everything app. It's all happening on X at jwright929. As always, you can listen on the radio dial, 92.9 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to keep listening, you can do so by streaming us on the Odyssey app. We're also available on TuneIn Radio as well as iHeart Radio. You can also check out the live streams over on YouTube, Twitch, and X, the Everything app. It is all happening on X. George Rogier is the producer of the program. You can follow him, of course, on the Everything app at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Jeffrey, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, indeed. Let's welcome to the program our company as he is each and every Tuesday on the program. He is, of course, Tim Murray of VSiN. You can check him out on VSiN's College Football, College Basketball Betting Podcast. Check him out on VSiN Primetime. Also look out for the VSiN Saturday show. Check your local listings. He's on the Everything app at one Tim Murray. Tim, good day, sir.
What is up, my friend?
Oh man, we've gotten through another NCAA tournament. We've now turned to Masters Week. I learned yesterday WrestleMania is not this weekend, but next weekend. You know, it's just chock full of just everything going on, but we'll blink and the NBA and the NHL playoffs will be going on.
Yeah, those are going to be starting up. When does the play-in tournament start? Next week?
So the final regular season game is Sunday, and then I think the play-ins start Tuesday, George. Can you double-check?
Yeah, let me check that.
I think we go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yep, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday.
I think we get the 9-10 games on Tuesday.
Or maybe 7-8 games on Wednesday.
Yeah.
Actually, it's probably flip-flopped, right? I would think the 7-8s would be first, right?
The only thing I was wondering, because the 9-10 is going to have to travel.
Do they have that posted? They're all just TBD at the moment. I don't see an actual...
Sense the excitement.
Well, I never know. Like, does TV have a say?
I'm going to go with no in this one because they're all on Prime.
Okay. Well, like, I was wondering, like, if they wanted to finagle the schedule.
They also don't have times set for any of this yet. So I would assume this is going to be we find out next Monday.
Or Sunday.
When's the last Sunday game? Last Sunday game, I think the last game is 7:30 our time.
So we are going to have a primetime game on Sunday.
We have
Yeah, because I thought they wanted to do. I thought they tried to do the NFL model where.
Yeah, half the games are at 5 o'clock. Half the games are at 7:30.
The whole Eastern Conference is at 5, and the whole Western Conference is at 7:30.
Yep.
I thought we used to do afternoons for those. I mean, I guess it makes
more like traditional matinee style.
Yeah, so we'll have the play-in starting next week. Then, of course, we'll get the actual playoffs going. And it does feel like, Tim, at least in the NBA, like we've all just collectively said, just get us to the playoffs.
Except for Billy Donovan.
Well, he said, get me to the end of the season. It appears.
Got to focus on the end of the season. Got to focus losing by 40.
Don't want to quit on that team. So
can't
we will.
Quit. Well, man of my word.
We will get into that during the list. Also, pretty good moment on the McAfee show with Coach K in real time, learning that they'd hired Mike Malone. We got a clip of that, so we'll play that. We'll get Tim's thoughts on that hiring as well. At some point, we are going to preview the Masters during the program. Eric's got things to do as he's trying to get out of town. So Eric's going to join us on Thursday at the normal time, so 12:35 for Eric. But we got a lot to get to. And I think let's start with the national championship game, Tim, because there were a couple of larger takeaways, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Is it a reasonable take to think last night Michigan was the best team, Dan Hurley's still probably the best coach?
I think that's more than fair. I think UConn completely dictated that game and uglied it up the way that they only could. And I actually got a text from someone who I wouldn't say is a big college hoops head, but is someone I really respect in the gambling space. And basically he said, If UConn wins this game, Danny Hurley might be the greatest coach of all time.
I mean, I was when they had the lead in the first half, and I did tell because Giannotto was at the game. So him and his boys went because he now lives in Chicago. So he drove over and he went. And I was texting him and I was like, the one good thing I would say is I don't know if Michigan's going to come out and shoot 35-40% from three in the second half, but they're basically in the game and they haven't made a single shot. And I didn't feel like what I didn't feel like what UConn was doing was going to be able to withstand that. But as they were like showing that this is probably not going to be a 20 to 30 point shellacking that Michigan's basically been handing out left and right.
Mm-hmm.
I did find myself thinking like, could you make the argument based on this run? Like he's now ahead of like even Krzyzewski.
I don't know if I'm ready to go there.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think they had to win.
Yeah. But I mean, he's still got plenty of time.
Right.
And I thought his quotes leading up to the title game were pretty telling. Like he knew they didn't have the talent that Michigan had. But he was like, it's only one game. We could figure this out. And it does feel like in a one-game situation, and this isn't trying to overlook the accomplishment of Dusty May and this program and how dominant they were. And in the KenPom era, they are the second-best team ever in the KenPom era. But when you think about this UConn team and what they had on that roster, the fact that they were here and competitive against a Michigan team that just embarrassed Arizona, it's a really impressive loss, in my opinion, by UConn. And when they have the talent, which we've seen them have, they destroy everybody like they did 3 years ago and like they did 2 years ago. So I came away being like, man, if you didn't trust in or believe in Danny Hurley already, yeah, you should probably believe in him now.
And maybe the reason why I came away with that take was the thought that I always struggle with what is the pie chart of coaching versus the roster. It's clearly significantly more than zero. I think we can all acknowledge that. But more times than not, I think we fall into the trap of, I was getting a little annoyed yesterday. It's like, well, Michigan's clearly better. Like every basketball reason you could give was Michigan is better. But then on like the flip side, it's like, but it's Hurley. And so to a certain degree, I mean, as much as I make fun of him, Mike Krzyzewski's a great coach. There have been Final Fours where they were outmatched and they got shellacked. You know, the UNLV game that you referenced on the...
But in his defense, the following year,
correct,
arguably the greatest team never to win a title, they beat in that Final Four, right?
Right.
But also, it is worth noting, and I know we're kind of going down a weird road here, the 1999 Duke team, in my opinion, because I was, you know, 3 years old when the UN, or 4 years old when UNLV in 91 lost, I think the 99 Duke team, in my opinion, is the best team to never to win a title. KenPom backs it up with his numbers. That team was outrageously good and loaded with talent, and Coach K didn't get them over the hump. Not to say that it's a knock on him that they didn't win in 99. They went on to win in 2001. But Dan Hurley, I'm like, if Dan Hurley was coaching that 99 Duke team, I'm pretty confident they're going to win a national title.
Yeah, and I think the other larger takeaway that I had from it was, and maybe this is more of a tournament-wide thing, we can like debate blue bloods or whatnot. It's like, UConn's the best basketball program right now.
I mean, it's pretty wild to think that up until last night, when they get to a championship, they'd won them all.
Correct.
Right?
Six for six
in a stretch of
three different coaches.
Three different coaches and in a stretch of less than three decades, right?
Yes.
From 99 to last night. That was their seventh national championship appearance, and they had won the previous six. Now, the Kevin, I'm not going to sit here and say Kevin Ollie's some great coach. He isn't. But he had Shabazz Napier. He got hot at the right time, and they made the magical run that they did, right? So
you can be an average coach and then do a great job at a given point in time.
Oh, sure. There's plenty of those.
Yeah.
And you could have a great player.
I mean, do I think Larry Coker is as good of a coach as, you know, Mike Leach? No, but Larry Coker did a good job with the teams. Like, sometimes not crashing the car is still a good job. And I want to be clear, this was not trying to figure out a way to slight Dusty May. I think very highly of Dusty May. It was just weird in a situation where you think of, I think these are two really well-coached teams. It was like the fact that that was even, the fact that it was even remotely a game when you were watching the difference in talent on the floor, I just sat there and I was like, man, Hurley's something else, man.
Well, and, you know, before the game, I was getting a little agitated from a betting standpoint because I bet the under and it just kept going over. The market kept moving over. I'm like, Dan Hurley knows there's only one way to win this game, and it's to make it ugly.
Yep.
And if you had gone back at this season and you looked at the up-tempo teams that they had played, it was pretty obvious when they played Marquette or they played Xavier, teams they felt like they had more talent than, they're like, sure,
we'll run play your game.
Whatever, we don't care. But when they played Arizona earlier this year without Terrace Reed, that game was brought to a crawl, and it was a 71-67 game. When they played St. John's at home, they played, I think, to like a 58-possession game. They brought that game to a crawl. So my expectation was they were going to try to keep this thing ugly. Now, when you're playing Michigan, who gets up and goes and has elite players, that's always worrisome. But like the fact that Mara didn't really get going last night was a testament to UConn. But then to flip it on the other side, it was a testament to Michigan that they had a guy like Elliot Cadeau who could emerge and have a big game, and just showed you the depth that this Michigan team has. To have Trey McKinney come off the bench, even though he wasn't great from the field, he was still effective, 9 points, 8 rebounds. Like, they showed that they had enough depth to withstand an ugly game from Yaxel Lendenborg. I mean, Yaxel Lendenborg is probably, I don't know, the second most effective player in college basketball this year outside of Cameron Boozer. I mean, you can make an argument, top five, whatever. He's a first-team All-American. He didn't really do anything last night. He had only 2 rebounds. He had 1 assist. He had 13 points. And they still kind of, once they, late in that first half, after that hook and hold was called,
yeah,
it kind of felt like that was like, that was when Michigan almost kind of kept them at arm's length. Like, yeah, we're going to win this game.
Because it gave them like a 2-possession lead, and you felt like in that type of game that we're talking about where it's grinding it out and every possession matters, that felt significant. I think I would even go so far as to say, you know, credit to May. I feel like he did a really good job of managing Lendenborg, because for a large portion of that game, I'm thinking like, should he even be out there? Because it felt like when UConn was really needing stops, it was like your best bet was let Lendenborg shoot and try to get the rebound. And then, you know, credit to him, after it looks like he's just absolutely done, like he hit 2 or 3 really key shots down the stretch. And you're like, oh, man. Like, I think that was why I kept feeling like Michigan's the better team. And I didn't want to make it seem like I was not impressed. What I was more felt like was like they had every possible options. Like, all right, you want to take this away? You want to take Merrill away? Fine. You know, here's Cadeau with the floater. You know, McKinney comes off the bench and hits, honestly, probably the dagger, right? I did think the most significant, I thought the defining stretch of the game, Caravan hits the 3. They press. They get the steal. Terrace Reed steals the pass. He kind of tries to get it quickly out to Solo Ball, maybe a little bit too far out in front, and they're unable to convert the layup. So it goes from potentially a 4-point game with 2 minutes left to McKinney in transition draining the 3, and then it was a 9-point game, and I just felt like that to me was like, well, that was UConn's shot.
Yeah, that was the 5-point swing. That was,
at a point in time when you couldn't afford a 5-point swing.
Right. they were able to take the punches. It wasn't a pretty game. And that's the way UConn wanted it. But look, if Braylon Mullins or Alex Caravan are shooting out of their mind, yeah, maybe they win this game. But even I go back to Caravan hitting his first three. I think he hit his first two threes. He had to work so hard to hit that first three. He came off a screen, got the ball top of the arc. They covered it, passed it back. Then he went to free throw line extended, pump faked, got his man in the air, set his feet, hit his three. And I was like, that was a great shot, but God, he had to work hard. Like, I think something that maybe was overlooked is that Michigan was the best defensive team in the country.
Yes, absolutely. And you saw how hard
everything was hard.
It wasn't even just like, you know, we've seen teams this year where, like, if you get into the paint on Arizona, it's tough to score. But you've been able to shoot, like, they'll give you, now more times than not, they get the guy at the perimeter they want taking the three, but, like, you can get open looks. It felt like last night it did not matter who it was. Every look felt so difficult for UConn.
Yeah, I mean, there were no open threes. It felt like the whole game, if they got a look. And to what UConn does so well, and that's why Luke Murray has been a highly coveted assistant, and he's moving on to Boston College, is they are maybe the best offense from a execution, from an X's and O's standpoint. I'm not saying they're the best offense in the country, but the way they flow and the way they draw up plays, you think back to the Duke game when they got Caravan that look late in the game that got him kind of back in it to cut the deficit. I think it was down to like maybe two or three at the point at the time. You know, they drew it up. He runs the baseline. He comes off a double screen. He's got a clean look for a three against a Duke team that's also very good defensively. It just felt like last night, everything they got, they had to work so hard for. And, you know, that was the undoing there for UConn. I mean, to be held to, you know, 63 points. I mean, you also think back to what Michigan did to Arizona. I mean,
yep,
that was outrageous. I mean, that is a ridiculous offense. And they helped them to what? I mean, it was 73 for the game, 32 for the first half. Like, they came out and knocked them right on their butts out of the gates. And UConn, to their credit, they really hung around almost the entirety of that first half. And to me, when I was watching it, and I'm like, man, that sequence that gave them 4 points in that one possession, I'm not saying it was the right or wrong call in the hook and hold. We disagreed with it on the air last night. I don't know what the explanation was. It was probably letter of the law, correct call. But it felt like, man, you work so hard. A box out doesn't go your way. You keep possession, and Michigan gets 4 points in that possession. You know, to go into locker rooms up four was pretty devastating, in my opinion.
I think what really hurt Caravan was he had a chance to let him go and dropped his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me like when he dropped the shoulder, that was when it felt like to me one you could have maybe let go. But I kept thinking, like, if they call this, I get it. Like, I'm not going to be outraged, but it's certainly, I think if you would have considered the second half, because I think actually the biggest problem I had with the officiating last night was it felt like in the first half it was a pretty tight whistle. And then in the second half it was like we had to see if the shot didn't go in, and if they drew blood, then we blew the whistle.
Yeah, there were bodies flying everywhere in the second half. Dudes were falling. I was like, there was one play. I think they did call UConn for a foul, but I think there were two different Michigan players that had been pushed to the ground.
Yes.
On like a loose ball. I'm like, good Lord. Yeah, they definitely, it felt very tight whistled in the first half, and then they were like, let them play.
And
boys,
like,
will be boys.
And my thing is, like, I just would rather have had the second half whistle.
All I ask for is consistency. Just be consistent with it, right? If you're going to be tight whistled, I'm not going to like it, but just be consistent. It felt like they went into the locker room. They're like, all right, let's loosen it up a little bit. Let's let them bang around down low.
The only problem that I do agree, in general, it's like, what would I rather have? Consistent? Yes, I would always prefer that. I just feel like in that game, you did not want foul trouble to be the defining feature of it.
And it was not the people you expected to have foul trouble,
no.
Right? It was solo ball and Silas Demary. I was worried about Terrace Reed.
Cadeau had foul trouble in the first half.
Yeah. So, I mean, the guys you expected to have, I mean, Yaxel Lendenborg had two fouls in the first, minute against Arizona?
It was the first, I want to say it was like at 18:32, so the first like minute 28.
Right, and, you know, he wasn't really in foul trouble or notable foul trouble. It was, that was kind of the unique thing about last night. It was the guards that were in foul trouble in that one.
Okay, so one of the other things that I've noticed last night that I think is driving me insane, I'd like to know if I'm the problem here. Like, if I need to go full Taylor Swift, like, it's me, hi, I'm the problem. Front Office Sports and my buddy Ryan Glasspiegel, who I love, works there. And I think they do very good work.
I would agree.
This prevailing narrative, though, is driving me insane. Michigan's athletic department budget is one of the highest in the country. Its men's basketball program spent just $14.4 million, ranking 26th in the country, a fraction of UConn's $21.6 million budget. But it was the Wolverines who cut down the net last night. So there's two things that involve context here. Number one, that is the spending data from last year. Now, it's also important to note UConn last year spent like that and got bounced in the second round.
Yeah, they got one of their big splashes was a complete flop in Mahaney.
But my bigger concern and issue is we are treating this data like it is the roster, and that's not. That is what the school spent on the team. So that's either, you know, revenue sharing, that's travel. That is not what they've been spending, you know, paying guys for appearance fees. Because this is what I also took note of. Remember when Yaxel tried to play up the, I really wanted to go to Alabama and they didn't recruit me?
Yeah.
Well, then Dusty May was asked about the same thing. He's like, yeah, I'm friends with Nate Oates. They weren't swimming in the same waters we were. Like, they wanted him. They basically, the implication was, there was no way they were going to be able to match our number. I'm not saying that means that Michigan is the number one spender in the country, but I keep going back to, unlike Texas Tech, who's very open and they've clearly made it like a marketing ploy of how much they spend on the roster. They obviously have the situation where they're also trying to show everyone we belong in whatever the new world is. And if the barrier for entry is going to be how much do you spend, we're not letting that be behind them. So they marketed it more. And then Indiana took the opposite approach of really downplaying it. But I don't remember if I mentioned it to you. I know I mentioned it on the show. Last week or maybe the week before when the Athletic had the coaches confidential mm-hmm. about the transfer portal, one of the teams that was consistently mentioned of, like, who has the most money was Indiana. And I just do not believe that Indiana was sitting there moneyballing it, although, as you and I have argued, moneyball gets really overdone because we acted like the A's did not have three number one starters. Like, three guys that would be aces on any team at the same time. But, hey, Scott Hatterberg moved from catcher to first base, so, you know, they moneyballed it. Right. And Jeremy Giambi walked a lot. Okay, cool. We're just going to ignore the fact that literally they had Zito Mulder and Tim Hudson. Like, we're just going to ignore that. But there's this idea that Michigan is kind of like, you know, they're putting together all the pieces in a way that everyone else doesn't do it. It's like, I've not seen evidence to support that. The head coach has even admitted, like, it was pretty good.
I think there's both can be true, right? You could be smart in the portal, but also Yaxel Lendenborg, if I remember correctly, was the most highly sought after transfer in college basketball last year.
I would suspect he was the highest paid transfer.
Right. So it's, I mean, he could have went pro and decided to go to Michigan. That was the right move. He upped his stock, probably going to be a lottery pick, even though he's 24 years old. But you can also be smart, right? You know, Mara is a guy that wasn't used properly at UCLA. He only started a game a year ago. So you can be smart and see something and unlock it like they did with Mara, even though let's not pretend like Adai Mara is going to Michigan for free. I'm sure he got a very handsome NIL piece there. But yeah, I think both can be true. It's similar to Indiana, you know, as you alluded to, right? Like Indiana spent a ton of money on Fernando Mendoza. Georgia was sniffing around on Fernando Mendoza. They spent big on Mendoza, but they also were smart about it. And they got players from mid-major ranks that they were able to unlock and get them to another level. So both can be true. You can't just go out there and shell out dough for everybody and it's all going to come together. So you have to be a good coach, which Dusty May is, and he proved that not only last night, but it also proved that at Florida Atlantic.
Yeah, he has proven at this point that Florida Atlantic run was more than like the bracket falling their way. Yes, right. If you're a 9 seed, you have to have some breaks along the way. But he's also proven that like there's clearly something there.
But yes, let's not, and I forget who it was. It wasn't Front Office Sports. It was some non-credible site that put out just ridiculously inaccurate portal numbers of what players are making in college basketball. And I think Goodman and so many other people are like, yeah, this is wrong. So Michigan is doing very well from a spending standpoint. Winning a national title will probably enhance that a little bit more. But also, Dusty May and his staff deserve credit, right? For
100%
finding the right players.
I guess what I'm saying is, do I think talent identification and roster fit, all things which I would attribute to coaching, do I think that's significant? I do. But we're using incomplete information. The problem is because everyone's guarding these numbers so closely because they view it as a competitive advantage, we don't actually know what Michigan spent on their roster. Even when we'll get the numbers from next year, we will know what the school spent on their spreadsheet, but we won't know all of the money that was spent from the NIL side of it. And I think that's the frustration that I'm having, whereas we're acting like Michigan was essentially middle of the tier Big Ten, and it makes me even more skeptical of the whole Indiana narrative that they were spending money, but like they weren't spending like anyone else. Like, I don't know. You don't know. Like, we don't know. Like, that's what's driving me insane is the fact that everyone's drawing these conclusions when nobody's actually reporting the real numbers.
And some of these numbers, I think we'll never find out, right?
I think that's probably, we will not find out until we get into a scenario where the league is regulated, if we ever get there. Like, in the end, we know what the Yankees spend.
Right.
We know what the Rays don't spend. We know, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and as of right now, yeah, we will not know.
I guess my larger point is, I can't prove it in the same way that they can't prove it, but I would venture the guess that Michigan, if we saw all of the money that went to the roster, Michigan was in the top five, certainly the top 10, top five spenders this year.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
Your point, that doesn't mean everything. I also think Kentucky was one of the top five to top 10 spenders.
Sure, Duke was
correct.
Maybe number one. I mean, Cameron Boozer, I know his dad went there and they had the, commercials or whatever, but I'm sure they were paying Cameron Boozer quite a lot. I'm sure they were paying Gongba quite a lot, right? Like, Duke probably is the most expensive roster or top three in college basketball. We'll never know. They're a private institution. They don't have to tell us. And they lost to UConn.
Well, it's funny. They're adopting more of a Texas Tech approach than they are, this Indiana or Michigan approach where they want to downplay it, because they've even stated on the record, like, whatever the new world is, we want to be a part of it. And That's why they're spending on football. That's why they're spending in men's and women's basketball. They're spending in baseball. They're spending in sports that definitely don't have a return.
Yeah. By the way, I looked it up. 247 Sports, yes, indeed, did have Yaxel Lindenborg as the number one transfer last year.
Well, I mean, there was an argument when because he went back to UAB last year. And even though I love my guy, AK, it's like, how much money did he leave on the table that year?
Right.
And I think AK scrapped together, like, he turned over every cushion he could find to scrap together every nickel he could to keep him for another year.
Well, and, you know, the irony, if you go back to the portal a year ago, I mean, Darian Williams left Texas Tech, and I'm sure he got a massive bag from NC State. How did that work out, right? Like, to my...
Well, P.J. Haggerty went to Kansas State because he got more money.
Sure.
Was it a better move for him? Like, to me, this is also the other thing. It's like, because we don't know what the actual number was, like, I know he went for more money, but do I know, like, I don't know. Like, the difference between, like, what if he got $3.5 million and Memphis offered $2.5 million? Like, $1 million is a lot of money. That's a huge difference. Like, it's where what I am getting increasingly annoyed with is the wide sweeping accusations with what I view as to be either faulty information at best or maybe incomplete information at best that's getting passed off as what we knew.
I mean, Moraes Johnson, also another guy. I mean, their whole roster, their whole starting lineup was basically transfers, right? Elliot Cadeau.
Yeah, yes, it was a starting five of transfers. That was right. A talking point. I know y'all probably didn't have sound or y'all couldn't hear the sound, yeah. That was a big talking point last night.
You think that's, I mean, it's been kind of proven it's more financially beneficial to keep your players in-house. You're going to have to pay them. Maybe we talked about this with football, right? It's like you get a little bit of a discount, not always a massive one, but you're going to get a little bit of a discount to keep players in-house. So to go out and get four starters in Lindenborg, who is number one, Mo Johnson, Mara, and Cadeau. Burnett, I think, was on the roster already. He transferred prior. Yeah, I think it's fair to say Michigan was the top five most expensive roster in college basketball.
And it's like, even if, to your discount about keeping your guys, I don't necessarily know if it's a pure discount. I think the advantages that you have is because you have them in person, you can lock them up sooner. And yeah. You know what I mean? Like, rather than have them go to the portal, but that.
And it's like, you know the system, all that. Basketball maybe a little bit different than football, but yeah, it's an inexact science. You have to have the money, but you also have to have the players that fit correctly. And once again, I think Mara is a good point, like our case in point, right? UCLA seemingly didn't use him accurately, and he gets unlocked going to Michigan, and I think he's going to be back. I would assume so. But
there's now talks of him being.
Well, and I'll say this, and I'm not knocking the people who have to do it. I know they're told to do it. How in the world are we doing way too early top 25s right now?
It's simply just because editors say we need it.
Oh, of course. Like, bosses say, hey, this is going to do well. This is going to be talking points. You have to do it. But if you're GP or anybody in the basketball world, you have to look at your boss and say, I can't do this.
So
these teams are going to look completely different.
Okay, here's the thing, though. I can understand the way too early top 25s. I'm a little bit more surprised, and I'm sure there are low maxes. I can't believe Vegas is putting out odds for the title.
Let me look at Circa. I'm curious because, like, this is no knock on the national shops, DraftKings and FanDuel, but to your point, they are probably very low limits right now, and you know they're willing to take some of it. But yeah, it is surprising to me that some of these books even have anything up right now. Because you just don't know who's on the roster. And if you follow the tea leaves accurately, you might be able to potentially scoop off, you know, an inaccurate number.
Yeah, and I mean, again, I'm sure you're not, you can't go and put 10 grand down or 25 grand down, but I to me, that one actually surprised
Circa
me.
Circa doesn't have odds.
There we go. Now we're cooking with gas. Yeah. Any other final thoughts before we hand out the awards for the tournament? Oh, we have this. You ready for the betting recap?
Yeah.
From our boy, John Ewing. Of,
yeah, I saw.
You already saw it?
Yeah, I did. Chalk, okay. Chalk, and chalk into chalk, chalk, chalk.
Favorite straight up won at a 73% clip. As noted by Tim during the first weekend, favorites won 22 straight games from Thursday to Saturday. Against the spread, they were 36-31. Favorites of 3 points or more were 29-18. Favorites of 6 points or more were 23-14. Best teams against the spread were Texas, who was 4-0. UConn went 5-1. Duke was 1-3 against the spread. Totals, though, we apparently had the totals nailed. 33-33-1.
Wow.
Totals of 150 or more, though, 17-9 to the over.
Whew.
Arkansas, of course, a perfect 3-0 on the over. In Illinois was 4-1 to the under. So that was the best teams in terms of the betting markets. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll hand out our awards from the NCAA tournament. We'll also talk about the North Carolina hiring coming up during the list and more. Stick around and listen to Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. This Saturday, for just 6 hours, get 60% off everything in the showcase at Robert Irwin Jewelers Bartlett location at the corner of Stage Road and Bartlett Boulevard, right next to the Kroger. That's right. It's a real 60% off sale for 6 hours only. Doors open at 10 a.m., and the sale will end at 4 p.m. It's the real deal. No marking up to mark down. No up to 60% off. Everything in the showcase is 60% off. That means you save 60% on diamond anniversary bands, diamond rings, and diamond pendants. You can also take 60% off designer jewelry. Even engagement rings are 60% off. There's never been a better time to put a ring on it. Bracelets, earrings, necklaces, gemstones, they're all 60% off. Even name brand watches, 60% off. There's over 1,000 items to choose from, and the sale only happens for 6 hours, 10 a.m. until 4 p.m. You can also take advantage of the special financing options they have, like take up to 6 months interest-free, or you can take up to 60 months to pay. But again, it's one day, and it's for 6 hours only. This Saturday, at the Bartlett location of Robert Irwin Jewelers at the corner of Stage Road and Bartlett Boulevard, right next to the Kroger, 10 a.m. till 4 p.m., and it's over. Full details over at rijewelers.com. All right, Tim, we are through another NCAA tournament. Let's take a look back and let's hand out some awards. I thought about going with our own most outstanding player from the entire tournament, but let's just go, who did you think was the player of the tournament? And I keep it as broad as possible so that you can do, you can take it in any direction you'd like.
I think even though they came up short, I think I'm going to go Terrace Reed.
That was the same direction I went.
I know he didn't play great last night, but he had moments of just absolute dominance. And like, Lendenborg was amazing, but two biggest games, you know, he gets hurt in the Final Four, wasn't ultra effective last night. So I think when you look back at the first game of the dance, he goes for 31-27, which is just stupid to even think about. Has 26 against Duke, had a double-double against Illinois. And even last night, he had 13 points and 14 rebounds. So I think the most outstanding player was Terrace Reed.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking about is, did anyone help his draft stock more in the tournament? Like, I know he's not going to be probably maybe not like a first rounder, but like, he was pretty much off of boards, and it feels like he's for sure getting drafted now.
Yeah, he probably worked himself into a second round grade, right?
Yeah. I mean, I think he's going to get drafted now.
Yeah. I think that's a fair. I'm trying to think. I mean, it's so hard to penetrate all the way up. Like, Darius Acuff early on. Hey, is this guy going to be a top three pick after the first weekend that he had? I think you could make an argument that Reed maybe benefited himself. Well, does Mara get into the discussions now? Does he test the waters? I don't know. I'm not sure. I know. I mean, Reed's exhausted his eligibility, so he's got to go. And yeah, I think he's going to be drafted now.
So I would suspect Mara's going to do the get information, and it feels like he's going to come back and be like the dominant force.
I think he's going to get too much money to go to the pros. I think he might be one of the highest paid college basketball players, if not the most highest paid. I don't know. I mean, I'm trying to think of players who are coming back or.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of this will, like, are there going to be some of the younger guys that look at this draft and think, you know what, I've got a nice chunk of change here. I can come back and be, you know, if not the number one pick next year, certainly top two or three, rather than going, you know, maybe late lottery, maybe slip out of the lottery. I do think there's the chance that some guys could maybe make that decision.
Right.
Like, does a guy like Mullins feels like a guy that can make that decision. Now, could he be the number one pick next year? It's like, I don't know, but like.
I think Mullins has to come back. He's so skinny. Like, now, he could go to the combine and light it up from three, and someone will say, hey, we will pick you 20th or something like that, and he could go. I think he would benefit greatly coming back and being one of the faces of college basketball next year.
Koa Pete feels like that to me. Like, if he wanted to make that decision, like, I think – I'm not saying I think I'd kind of like for the Grizzlies to have the opportunity, but, like, those – he's in that camp if I could see it. And then, like, I don't think it'll happen, but a guy that could really talk himself into this scenario that we're talking about is Nate Amendt. Like, mm-hmm. Amendt could easily say, you know what, let's come back for one more year, I'll make good money, and then I really can be the number one pick. And it's not, like, that far-fetched.
Adam Finkelstein of CBS, his yep. most recent mock, has Amendt going 9th.
And again, I think most signs are pointing towards it, but, like, I could see where that's a decision. All right, the star of the tournament, and I'll go first here.
Okay.
Florida steroids guy.
Huh.
And oh then God. When he even showed up, because he clearly had non-refundable tickets, and like what, and he showed up the next weekend, and like that Florida steroids guy was just, to me, he was the star of the tournament.
I'm trying to think.
Didn't he show up like the next weekend in a different team's jersey?
Yeah, I think he was wearing Iowa because they beat him. I think he was a man of honor. You know, if my Gators can't win at all,
gotta root for the team
that put him out.
Well, where does the creepy basketball rank?
Old head, or is it old, yeah. What was it? Old yeah, ball. That. So last night, and I know y'all didn't have the sound on, but the I'll give TBS, Turner, whoever CBS, whoever the production team, they got me ready for the game. Like when they had like the highlight montage, like it made you really think, like, was this tournament like the best of all time? And even though like we sat there and lived through it, it's like it was a good tournament, but it wasn't like, it's not certainly going to be one that like I'll remember forever and ever and ever. But like that highlight package alone, like had me so geeked up for the title game. Like it was well done by all involved. And that old ball was on that. I was like, oh God, can we never do that again? Can we Rex Chapman that? Like, one that needs to be, old ball needs to be one and done. Oh, he says things on the internet that I like. Let's put him on TV.
86 old ball.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a pretty good pull. The defining moment of the tournament.
Mullins' three-pointer.
I think that's, I was trying to think because Michigan's two biggest games, with the Arizona game, it was such a bloodbath, but it's like, if you have to sit there and go, what was the one moment? It's like, I don't know. Like, it was just utter domination. And then last night, I think there was that big sequence of UConn can't finish the layup, McKinney hits the three, but like, is that three the defining moment of the tournament? It's like, I don't think so, right?
I think the biggest moment, I mean, the biggest moments, in my opinion, I think it's UConn's comeback finished off by the turnover and the three, the, you know, Hurley's mom saying, holy bleep and bleep.
Yep.
I think everything about that game.
It was nice to see, like, Elite Eight. Hey, Hurley came by this naturally.
The Shire kind of moment, just like...
the smile.
That awkward smile.
Yep.
And then you had the St. John's finish against Kansas and the Patino storytelling of... Then he looked at me and I realized he didn't even score a point all game.
But it was a good play.
Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah,
Bell's said, calling for himself. Yeah. And then the true buzzer beater of Owe, those would be my top three moments.
Yeah, I was also thinking Chase Johnson pulling up literally from the logo. But the thing is, like, was his really that much farther away than Braylon Mullins was? And Mullins was to win the game.
Well, and then you also have to point out, too, I mean, Iowa beating Florida.
Yep.
Their play drawn up, you know, the bounce pass to the corner to get them the victory. And I guess let me take a step back. I think the moment to me is Mullins. The second moment might be the missed half-court shot by Nebraska or by Vanderbilt.
Still have no idea how it didn't go in.
Like, so that would be my 1-2.
Most heavy-handed narrative.
I'll let you lead off.
I went with Braylon Mullins is from Indiana. I didn't hear that. I didn't know that. Anyone?
Well,
could anyone tell me that? No way.
I live in the gambling world, so I'll give you the gambling one. Danny Hurley just covers.
I mean, there is an argument to the best play of last night for some people out there was, I think it was Lindenborg. Who threw it the
just
length of the floor?
Down the field. Yeah, just
oh, my
it down
God.
The court.
But he did cover.
He did. 19-1 ATS over the last four NCAA tournaments. So, in my world, the Hurley just covers was played up quite large. You know, whether it was the Duke game, the Illinois game, going into the last night, that was big in my life.
The other heavy-handed one with Hurley is, I don't know if you know this, did you know his suit was ripped?
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
They really leaned into that. Like, oh, he's got his good luck suit, but it's ripped, and so he didn't have time apparently to get a tailor to fix it. That felt a little disingenuous. Really, there's nobody in the entire state of Connecticut that couldn't sew that bad boy back together. No one.
It's like on Sunday when he said that, oh, I don't know if hospitals are open to do an MRI in Indianapolis.
Uh-huh.
What? The hell are you talking about?
Best game.
I mean, Duke UConn is up there with the comeback.
Is Duke UConn really that much different, though, than St. John's, Kansas?
I think Vanderbilt, Nebraska was the best.
That's what I had. The other one that I put under consideration.
I think Kansas St. John's was a bad game that had a good finish.
I kind of think the same thing about Duke UConn.
Like, Duke had a flurry in that first half where you're like, wow, this team's not going to be stopped. And then it just kind of slowed down. Wisconsin High Point was really entertaining.
A very fun game. The other ones I had considered, I had Nebraska Vandy, Florida Iowa.
Yeah,
I loved that game.
Yeah.
Purdue Texas was a really good basketball game.
Yeah. No, you're right. The tip-in. Yeah, the late tip-in. No, you're right.
And then I had listed Duke, UConn, St. John's, Kansas, but like I don't – the other games that we're talking about I thought were better games for 40 minutes.
I'm trying to think of the other ones that were kind of rock and sock'em robots back and forth. I think Vanderbilt, Nebraska was probably my most favorite game to watch from start to finish.
Arkansas High Point was pretty good.
Yeah, I was just annoyed.
Yeah. I still think that was a Brazil problem. But I think Nebraska-Vandy was like, when I was watching it the whole time, I was like, this is a heck of a basketball game. And obviously Nebraska and their fan base deserves all the credit. Like, the atmosphere, I think, was a huge part of that. Because, like, that place was rocking.
Duke St. John's was pretty good.
Yeah, that was, yeah. That was really a better game than actually Kansas St. John's was.
Oh, totally. And you had, you know, and it's funny because I'm not one to defend Duke because they don't need defending, and it's just more fun to hate on them. Shire deserves a lot of credit for throwing the zone out there. I mean, they were down double digits to St. John's. It looked like they couldn't really get anything going, and they come back to win it. But yeah, I think Florida, Iowa, or Vandy and Nebraska, probably the two best. Wisconsin High Point was just awesome. Not a lot of defense, just back and forth they went.
I was trying to think of how to define this. It was like most overlooked game.
Yeah.
Could we maybe throw Alabama, Michigan in there? Like, up until last night, Alabama was really the biggest threat to Michigan.
Yeah, they held them, in air quotes,
yes,
to 90 points.
Well, I mean, as much as Alabama's going to hold anyone, but, like, the bigger thing was they were actually able to score on them a little bit.
You know, I would say if you're looking underrated, I mean, what about Duke Siena?
No, I mean, in terms of, I think the problem, like the fact is, like, if you get very annoyed when you commit to that 40 minutes and then you watch the 16 just die.
You know what was a good game? The first game of the tournament was really good.
Yes, well,
Ohio State, TCU,
Ohio State
was really good.
I still don't know what Ohio State's last possession was. They had 4 seconds, like 4.5 seconds, and they just like walked it up the floor. Like, yes, Jamie Dixon's a very good coach. Like, credit to them that they made them catch the basketball away from, like, with your momentum. There was still time to get a better shot than they got. Best win? Are we in agreement, Michigan over Arizona?
Yeah.
I mean, that was the one where I was a little more hesitant, I feel like, than the masses to proclaim Saturday was going to be the national title.
I was too.
To be clear, though, in my heart of hearts, I didn't really. I know you asked me this. It's like, can we see it going a blowout? I thought the only way it would be a blowout was if Michigan could post a number and Arizona couldn't catch up. But then, weirdly, I didn't expect like Arizona to not try to catch up.
Yeah, they kind of.
They like folded.
They quit in that second half. They
were
out.
They were just like running out the clock.
Yeah.
Worst loss.
I mean, Duke has to be. I mean, you blow a 19-point lead in the Elite Eight.
I had one more candidate.
And I think you're better than them. I guess the definition of worst loss, I was wildly surprised to see Texas Tech get absolutely curb stomped by Bama. Like, I thought Texas Tech would win, but if they didn't win, I thought it would be competitive. And just to get their will sucked out of them like that, I was like, whoa, okay.
Yeah, that was really one of those ones where who did they play in the first round that was the